Awesome. This is interesting. I feel like a pastor up here with this microphone. This is great. Well, thank you so much for having me. Any chance I get to leave D.C., I am super excited to do so. I am from the South, but I love coming out west. It's beautiful out here, and thank you so much for letting me leave D.C. and the hustle and bustle and come out here where the real people live, right? So, as was mentioned, I am Executive Director of Government Affairs in our D.C. office. There's a lot of stuff I want to cover today, and I'm going to keep my eye on the clock as well. I don't want to run over, but I want to make sure that I at least quickly touch on quite a few things that are happening. D.C. is obviously always a very busy place, and when we get towards the end of a year, it gets even busier because Congress goes, oh, crap, we have a whole lot of stuff to get done so that our constituents, you all in this room, feel like they actually accomplished some things for the year. So there's a lot going on. And so quickly, just if it's okay, I'm going to stand down here. I think I'm tall enough for everybody to see me. Just quickly, who NCBA is. Obviously, we do represent a lot of cattle producers. Our headquarters are in Denver. And then our government affairs office is about 20 of us in D.C. My team consists of about 6 government affairs individuals that all go to the Hill every day and lobby your members of Congress. We have 2 lawyers and 2 vets in the office, so we've really beefed the team up, pun intended, and we have a strong team in D.C. that's that's working for our members, and so it's been interesting with this change in the administration to be able to go in even more so to these federal agencies and really get some good face time, and we're going to continue to get some good people in some of those agency positions. So one of the things in the defense world that people always ask generals is what keeps you up at night. So that's kind of where I get this phrase from. But these are just some of the things that keep us up at night in the D.C. office. I could have filled up a couple of slides with the amount of issues that we're working on. A lot of these items are ones I'm going to address today, and then are ones that different members in my office are working on as we speak. So those are the items I put up here. I'm going to address the Farm Bill, ELD hours of service, a little bit on tax reform. Obviously, with tax reform, I've got a sheet in my hand because I want to give you the most up-to-date information because that is something that's literally changing every day. I was changing my slide on the flight into Denver yesterday, so that's how up-to-date I want to keep you. And a couple of environmental issues I'll touch on and then some trade, but obviously you're going to see some things you're going to continue hearing about sage-grouse and ESA reform. WOTUS is always moving. And then some monument designations. I know the White House is going to come out with a couple of announcements probably next week on that. And these are good things, of course. So I'll start off with the Farm Bill. We have 3 main priorities, and that is to make sure we strengthen the research title. The funding for ag research continues to lessen. It's an unfortunate thing that continues to happen. So we want to, at the very least, maintain the funding that we have. We know how important research is to our industry and to you all and to the work that you do and doing it better every year. We are as productive as we are because of the research that's done. Unfortunately, that message is sometimes lost in Congress. So we're going to continue beating that drum. Conservation title is also very important to most of you in here. Continuing to protect programs like EQIP. There's been some rumbling of maybe doing away with conservation stewardship program and taking what I believe is about $2 billion and putting that into EQIP to add money into the EQIP program while still maintaining some of the good qualities of CSP. They'll, of course, if this becomes a thing, they'll pay out the CSP contracts as they stand right now. But again, just some rumblings over that, so I wanted to mention it, but we're going to continue to work on that. We don't have Farm Bill language yet. Tax reform and the way D.C. works, everything gets pushed down the road. We might see some language hopefully in February. That's the latest information that I have. But again, the way D.C. works is that if something else big comes up, everything else gets pushed down the road. So, and I would say the language you'll see will probably be from House Ag Committee. The Senate is a little bit slower. But we will continue to go into House and Senate Ag and have those conversations about the Farm Bill. Our third and largest priority is the creation of a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. Without beating a dead horse, because I hope that all of you in here have heard about our request, we're working with pork, dairy, and sheep to push for this bank. It would be housed overseas, and it would be a bank that would have enough doses for us to cover an outbreak, as well as the ability for surge capacity, which is very important. We move 600,000 pigs a day and somewhere around that in cattle every day as well along our roads. And so we have a lot of animal. Unlike most countries, we move a lot of animals every day. And so the spread, unfortunately, would happen rather quickly. So we want to make sure that we're prepared. We're selling this as an insurance policy for you all. And so we're working with members of Congress. The request is large. We know this is not a cheap endeavor. The request is $150 million a year for 5 years, which is the life of the Farm Bill. Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary Perdue, is supportive. He is a vet by trade, and he knows the importance of protecting ourselves, which is what we're trying to do with this request. So we'll continue to push for that. This foot and mouth disease vaccine bank would fall under the miscellaneous title. We don't need a livestock title to do this. And so we will continue to keep our eye on these three items as the Farm Bill moves forward. I think I feel like we're in a good place, but we're going to continue to push forward and hope that we get the outcome that we'd like to see. So this is a somewhat hot button issue. I hope that you all are somewhat familiar with the electronic logging devices. The last couple events I've spoken at, I've heard that there are people that are not aware. This is something that I spend a good majority of my day on every day. So essentially these devices will take place of written logbooks starting December 18th of 2017. So I guess there's a lot of concern with the devices themselves, with the implementation, with the lack of outreach that DOT promised to agriculture and specifically livestock haulers. There has not been a lot of outreach. Instead, there's just been a whole lot of questions. Probably about 10 months ago, Senator Hoeven, it came up in a briefing from DOT, that this 150 air mile exemption does cover livestock haulers. And I think that there was a vast majority of our haulers that did not know that this ag exemption that was on the books covered them as well. And I'll go a little bit more into that, but it's 150 air miles, which comes out to about 172 road miles. And while you're in that on that 172 of driving, it does not count towards your hours of service. And so that's obviously important when you look at. You have the law currently is 14 hours of on duty, 11 hours of drive time, and then you have to rest for 10 consecutive hours. Our message is if we run into issues and we ask a driver to stop and rest for 10 consecutive hours, he can't pull over in the Walmart parking lot with a load of cattle and rest for 10 hours. And so this is the message that we are delivering to DOT as part of a much larger message. So when we started, so I came to NCBA about a year and a half ago from the Hill. This was one of the first things that was brought to my attention. There were a lot of individuals that were concerned about moving over to these devices and the loss of any flexibility. The device is attached to your engine, and that information is sent over to DOT. They know exactly what your truck is doing at all times. So the first thing we did was we worked with our House and Senate members. The House was a little more interested in giving us some appropriations language. Our appropriations language, which passed through the House, is a one-year delay for livestock haulers and our insect haulers for 1 year. You can only appropriate 1 year at a time. So it's a delay from using the devices for 1 year. The Senate wasn't as comfortable with that language. We certainly have a lot of support from senators. The Senate lead on the transportation side, on the Senate side, comes from the great state of Maine. So that didn't do us any favors. But we do have a lot of support from our senators out west for sure on our appropriations language. We're going to continue working with House and Senate. They both have letters that we're moving to the appropriators right now on the issue. So we certainly have the support. And then the other item that we Well, before I go back to the wind, pretend you didn't see that. So the other item we have is a petition to DOT for a waiver for livestock haulers from ELDs. So when you petition DOT, we left the petition open-ended. They could give us a waiver as short as, you know, a couple of days, as long as 5 years. Obviously, the goal would be for them to give us 5 years. When the petition dropped in on Halloween, we had 30 days for comments. And comments open up to our organization, other organizations that we're working with. We're working with Farm Bureau, Pork, and Livestock Marketing Association specifically. We open up the comment period, which means it opens it up to people that want to see us get the waiver and people who don't. So DOT will rule on this at some point in time. Obviously, the deadline is a couple of days away, so we're hoping that we get, you know, as much as a five-year waiver. What that does is it gives us more time to focus on what our end goal is, and that is to look at hours of service. The devices are probably something that when we all get trained up on them and we get to a better place and DOT does outreach, we're probably going to have to get to a place where we're all using them. That's just the hard truth of it. However, if we use them, but livestock haulers have flexibility or we have something more in hours of service, it will make it a lot easier to manage. So the items that we're talking about, we have 150 air miles on the front end. What about the back end? The purpose of the exemption on the front end is because loading can be very volatile. Well, what about unloading? What about when we run into weather issues? There's a lot of volatility, and when you're hauling a live animal, that increases exponentially. And so a lot of the educating we've been doing at DOT is what it takes to haul live animals around this country. One of the DOT officials looked at me and said, "Don't you still haul cattle by rail?" I mean, this is the kind of educating that we are having to do. These are transportation guys. They're not ag guys. So that's what we've been working with. But our end game is not to completely dismantle the ELDs. The end game is hours of service. How about a little more driving time? How about instead of 14 hours of on duty, 14 hours of drive time? It's not going to be, we're not going to be able to make it perfect for everybody. California and Florida, parts of Montana, I know it's still going to be hard. But falling within the safety guidelines, we're going to continue to ask for more on hours of service. We're also talking about split sleeper berths. Going back to that, again, it would have to be very flexible for our industry because of weather. But we have a lot of ideas, and we need more time to talk to DOT about these ideas and possible solutions. We know that we're being heard, and we know we're being heard because the other day we were granted a 90-day waiver. Now, they granted the waiver for all ag haulers. But those of us in the room, it was a majority of groups representing livestock haulers. We have been beating down their doors at DOT. We have members of Congress that have been really helpful in doing the same. This gives us 90 days after the implementation date of December 18th to continue using the written logbooks and to continue our conversations with DOT. Livestock marketing, myself, Pork, and Farm Bureau are going in to continue this conversation the week after next. And my hope is that they're going to look at us and say, "We're going to give you a waiver for a couple years so we can continue these conversations and have more time." But this is certainly a win. They heard us. They heard us because they said, "Look, we need more time to go over your petition." Great. Take as much time as you want and then grant it. They also need more time to give clarification on the 150 air mile exemption. There is still questions about when it actually starts. Is it the point source of the truck that day, or is it when the first animal is loaded on the trailer? There's questions, and the law is not very clear. So DOT's responsibility is to clarify what this exemption looks like. On top of that, there are still law enforcement that are not aware of this exemption. Do you think that if you get pulled over and you're under this exemption and you think that you're all fine, that that officer is maybe not going to write you a ticket or give you a refund later? Probably not. I don't think that they're in the business of giving refunds. So it is important that DOT does their job and make sure that local law enforcement are on the same page with current ag exemptions. This is your exemption, and you have every right to use it, and you shouldn't get a ticket when you're using it. So we need more guidance from DOT. And so we got the win the other day. We're excited about that. It gives us more time. But DOT's got to get to work and get some clarifying guidance out on the exemption and then continue to look at our petition. So Please make sure that if there are people here that don't know about this, that you let them know. I've been trying to get the word out for the last year, but again, because DOT did not do the outreach that they said they would, there's still a lot of people that aren't familiar with this issue. So tax reform. I think I enjoy talking about ELDs a little bit more, but these were the items that NCBA was focused on when we started down this tax reform road. So we haven't done tax reform since these things were a thing. I mean, that's that's how long it's been. I thought these were pretty good pictures. So NCBA started off doing we started a website. We took stories from you all. Some of you in here may have submitted tax stories. Capitol Hill wants to hear from its constituents. They want to hear real life stories. They don't want to hear from me. They want to hear about what it's like for you every day, what the last speaker just talked about, what it takes for you to get your affairs in order. How does the estate tax affect you? And they need to hear, because after we put out our website, we got crap like this. This is the kind of garbage that ends up out there when we start talking about how the estate tax affects you all. They sit here and talk about how you're driving around in limos. I mean, it's absurd, but this is the battle that we fight every day. So recently, the House has passed their bill, and then I believe yesterday, what does my slide say? Yep, I changed this on the flight yesterday. Yesterday, the Senate, out of the Senate Finance Committee, passed their version. So very quickly, on the estate tax, the House version doubles the exemption rates and then a full permanent repeal in 2025. The Senate version doubles the exemption limit for the death tax, but there's no repeal. On expensing, the House version allows full immediate expensing after September 2017 and before January 2023. Let's see, in interest deductions, the House version preserves interest deductibility for businesses with gross receipts under $25 million. The Senate version preserves interest deductibility for businesses with gross receipts under $15 million. So the biggest thing to take from this information is we're going to continue to focus on the estate tax. That's NCBA's number one priority, as well as continuing to work on the interest deductions. The good news here is that the Senate will hopefully get their bill on the floor this week and hopefully get something out. Again, they're running out of time because Christmas is right around the corner and they go home. But the good news is you have the House version and the Senate version. They're going to come together and go to conference. Conference is where they're going to work out the details. They come together, and it's not all members. It's a handful of members from the House, it's a handful of members from the Senate, and they come together, and that's where they do the real work. The same thing happens with most of our bills in Congress. The House says, these are the priorities we have. The Senate says, these are our priorities. And then they come together, and they have to compromise. The hope is that they will continue to hear from us and know that we don't want to compromise on the death tax. We don't want to compromise on interest deductions. These are the items that we have been focusing on. We have a government affairs individual named Danielle Beck, and she focuses on this every day, talking to both the Senate and the House. The good news is we do have a lot of strong ag members on both Senate and both on the Senate side and the House side who know how important these items are to us. So we're going to continue to push that. The president said he would like a tax reform bill on his desk before Christmas so that he can sign it. That is still the hope. That is still the goal. Obviously, this issue is moving very quickly, and so we're going to continue to stay on top of it. Very briefly, I just wanted to mention that the House did pass an ag guest worker program about a month or so ago. Just so you have an idea of what's in it, obviously, this is one of those things that will get pushed further down the road because of things like tax reform. But I think it's important to remember that we do have a president that is still very keen on immigration in general. So when we talk about immigration at NCBA, we talk about the need for border security, which is very important. And then we talk about the need for an ag guest worker program. So I think it's important to just mention that this has passed out of the House. Now, they had the Judiciary Committee on the House is a very interesting committee. You have very far right members and very far left members. So coming together on something like an ag guest worker program where you have members from, you know, Chicago on the Dem side that probably don't care about an ag guest worker program. I think it was tough to get it through. NCBA was supportive of this bill. And as you can see, there were three Republicans that were asked to, if they couldn't support it, they were asked to abstain in order to get the bill out of committee. But and some of these items, while you may not love them, this is what it takes to get a bill through Congress. There has to be some compromise. So there is a cap on the workers, but again, if you have a current H-2A worker that comes back to the same farm or ranch, they aren't counted towards that 450. So that obviously increases the number significantly. Also, something that I don't think is on this slide is that after the first year, if that 450 is reached, which more than likely it will be, there is an increase. I'm sorry, it's right there. There's a 10% increase every year that the cap is reached. So I think that the judiciary staff wrote this in a way where maybe you could kind of consider there's a few loopholes to increase that number down the road. And then the 45-day touchback doesn't have to be their home country, doesn't have to be consecutive. So it still gets the members who want these workers to go home and leave the U.S., it still gets them to a good place that they have to go home at some point. But they could take a week-long vacation down in Mexico and then come right back and do the rest of the days at another time. There was a mandatory E-Verify bill that that followed through with H.R. 4092. They passed through the committee together, but there is a three-year delay on implementation for agriculture. So all in all, it's a pretty solid bill. It's not perfect, but we haven't had a guest worker bill, or we haven't made any changes to the guest worker program in a while, and these are changes that we need to see. So I feel like it's a good step in the right direction. So one of the environmental issues that that our environmental councils and our D.C. office are working on is this EPCRA CERCLA issue. This is the reporting issue that you've probably heard some things about. I know we've been doing some media on it for sure. So recently, as in about 6 months ago or so, the D.C. Circuit Court vacated a decision that was made under the Obama administration because of environmentalist groups pushing that livestock operations as small as 208 head of cattle were going to have to start reporting on their emissions. EPA looked at us and said, "Oh, we don't know how to tell you to do that." they were kind of caught off guard. This was not something that was on our radar because the rule, the exemption for ag was created in 2008. So fast forward, the environmental groups are always looking for a reason to get your information and to do as much harm as possible, which is exactly what they're doing with trying to get operations as small as 208 head of cattle to report. They are always looking for ways to gather information, right? And so this is a perfect way to do it, because once you report to the National Response Center that's run by the Coast Guard, your information becomes public. And that's exactly what they want, let alone the fact that it's tedious reporting. And most importantly, the Coast Guard's National Response Center is for chemical explosions and for, you know, major chemical issues that emit into the air that the public needs to know about for their own safety. It's not about, as my environmental counsel says, cow farts. That's not what the NRC is for. And gosh knows, the Coast Guard, we sat down with the Coast Guard and Senator Fisher's office of Nebraska, and they looked at us and said, "We don't want these reports. We want the reports that we're currently getting on the larger operations, but we will be inundated." There are seven people that work in the NRC. They're all Coast Guard employees, and there are seven of them manning the phones for chemical explosions and for major issues that the public has a right to know about. They can't handle all the reports. If all of you in this room start reporting tomorrow, they can't handle it. They don't have the manpower, and they don't want to. So we are working with the NRC. We're working with the Coast Guard. We're working with our local local officials, our local firemen and police, and your local response individuals, because they're the ones that if the Coast Guard calls up and says, "Someone reported on X farm," they're the ones that have to go out and address that issue. If they show up and there is nothing going on, that is a waste of their time and resources. And when you're talking about rural America and small operations in small towns, that you can't use their resources like that. So we We had some good news on this the other day, too. I'm full of good news today for you guys. So the courts came back and said that there's a stay essentially until January 22nd so that they can take a look because of all the work that we have been doing as well as our other livestock groups, just continuing to push that this is not a thing. The Coast Guard doesn't want it. We don't need to be reporting. There were a few groups out there that started reporting when they thought that they legally had to report, and the Coast Guard system got flooded, as was expected. Again, in my mind, this is also a national security issue. If there's a real chemical explosion at a plant and you all need to know about it and the Coast Guard doesn't get to it or doesn't see it because its email system is completely flooded or its phones are completely flooded, that should be a concern to the general public. So we do have a lot of members of Congress, both Dems and Republicans, who are very supportive of pushing some legislation so that the enviro groups don't continue to come back and push this, because they will. They have the resources, and they're going to continue to come back and push this until the point where, you know, someone with three cows in the backyard is having to report. I mean, that's their end goal, because they want information on livestock operations. So we have appropriations language. Again, it's in the House. The Senate didn't want to push anything, but we're not sure what the end of year budget looks like. Hopefully we don't have a government shutdown, but we need a budget in order to get that language through, so we're not putting all of our eggs in that basket. But the good news is we have a stay until the 22nd. So let's talk about, sorry, I'm going to run over on time. Sorry about that. So top trading partners. So these are the markets that we are focused on. And unfortunately, these are the trade agreements that the Trump administration is focused on too, but not in a positive way. And this is causing us a lot of heartburn. So we continue to push on Do No Harm and NAFTA. We had a Nebraska cattle producer testify in front of House Ag a few times on this. You know, we just continue to try to push our message. We need a bilateral with Japan. Please don't mess with CORUS. Korea is not only a great trading partner, but gosh knows that right now we need to keep them close to us. We need to stay friendly with them as possible. They love our product. We've heard that in the Costco, they only sell American beef, and they have to restock the counters in the Costco in Seoul 3 or 4 times a day. So they're going to continue to buy our products. And so we need to do everything we can to not mess that up. These are important markets to us. You know, Mexico and Canada are significant markets as well. And right now we're just very concerned about the rhetoric coming out of the White House. And so we're going to continue down that road. The NAFTA conversations just seems like it's just kind of going like this. But again, we continue to have conversations with the White House because that's where we really need to put the pressure right now. And then just briefly, the political outlook. Again, when we talk about trade, Greg Dowd used to work for NCBA, so he knows the industry kind of well. He was the chief economist for NCBA for a number of years. We need him in that ag negotiating position. The White House needs to know how important these trade agreements are to us. So we're going to continue to push for Greg to get pushed through the Senate. We have a couple other people that are being held up. Obviously, it's like as soon as the Trump administration nominates somebody, somebody in the Senate comes out and says, no, we don't like them, we don't want them. And then we get into this waiting pattern. We need bodies and agencies so that we can get work done. There do have to be certain people in certain positions to get some of our things done. The middle and the lower level individuals can't sign off on a lot of these bigger items. It has to be from some of these undersecretaries. Secretary Perdue is doing a great job for us. We're excited to continue working with him, but we got to get some other people in place. We're getting ready to implement these ELDs on the entire trucking industry, and we don't even have an FMCSA administrator. I mean, that's crazy to me. He has been through one hearing on the Senate side, but he's coming from the New Jersey DMV, for whatever that's worth. So that's what we're looking at working with. But we're going to continue to just push that we can get some people in place and we can get some more work done. We've got great people in place at EPA with Mr. Pruitt, and we've got Secretary Perdue, and we're excited to continue working with those individuals. So that was a lot of information. Hopefully it was helpful and informative. If I didn't get to something that you wanted to know about, there's my email address. I'm happy to to take emails at any point in time. And if you have any other questions about anything else we're working on, I only touched on some of the things that we are focused on in D.C., but I'm happy to answer any last-minute questions, if anybody has any.